Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me now is Susan Sanders. She's the Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Rapid City. Today marks the 45th anniversary of the Black Hills flood. Susan, thanks for taking time and coming on the program today.
You're welcome. Well, thanks for inviting me to participate.
So 45 years ago today, the forecast was...
Well, it started off as a fairly foggy day, real humid, and it didn't really clear up very much, but there was also a forecast for thunderstorms, which is kind of typical for this time of year over the Black Hills.
Right. They just kind of move in and keep on going. But what happened with this storm?
What was unusual about this weather pattern was that there was incredibly humid air over eastern South Dakota. And we had east winds across much of the state, which was pushing all that moisture towards the Black Hills. And just like we have our incredibly high upslope snows over the northern Black Hills in the wintertime with northwest winds, the east winds caused upslope clouds to form over the eastern slopes of the Black Hills, so just west of Rapid City. And that particular day, there weren't any higher level winds that normally push those thunderstorms that form over the hills onto the plains. And so the thunderstorms just built there and stayed in that same area, kept being fed by all that moisture. And so they were producing rain over the same area for several hours, a very efficient rain-producing system.
So not a lot of wind to push those clouds and move them along.
Right, yes. They were stationary over the eastern slopes of the Black Hills. So from Sturgis down to west of Rapid City and Keystone area where the heaviest rain fell.
Now, about 15 inches in some parts?
Yes, there were estimates. They didn't have rain gauges in every area, but they estimated rainfall as much as 15 inches around Nemo and down through the Sheridan Lake area towards Keystone.
So let's talk for just a minute, Susan, about the tools that they had to make forecasts back in 1972.
Well, the forecasts were done on a regional basis, so we didn't have localized forecasts back then coming out of Rapid City, and even the detection tools were pretty minimal at that time. The National Weather Service office did not have its own radar. Ellsworth Air Force Base, the weather station there, did have a radar. And the School of Mines, which was doing research, also had a radar that they were operating that particular day because there were thunderstorms. And so they were providing some basic information to the Weather Service. But even those radars weren't, they didn't have all the information like our Doppler radars have now, which have calculate storm movement, and they also have precipitation estimates. Another factor was that we didn't have a lot of stream gauges. And so just about 20 years ago, different entities, specifically Rapid City, Pennington County, worked with the U.S. Geological Survey to add a whole network of rain and stream gauges along Rapid Creek, through the Black Hills and the tributaries that also contributed greatly to that flood crest in 1972. So we're watching the Doppler radar. We're seeing where the precipitation is falling, and then we can check those rain gauges, see how much rain's actually fallen, and we can watch how the streams are increasing and see where there could be potentially flooding.
You can do that all from a computer right now.
Yes, we do that with our workstations here at the Weather Service office in Rapid City.
And the warning system wasn't what it is today then either.
No, the warning system was pretty much Weather Service people would pick up the phone. It was a one-way hotline to the media, so when they picked up the phone, there was either an alert or flashing light or something in the TV, one TV station, and radio stations. And so then somebody in that studio would pick it up and listen to what the Weather Service person was announcing and copy that down and then either go live on the air or make their scrolls and announce that information. And we have so many different ways to notify people of hazardous weather and flooding now that people, wherever they are, wherever, whatever they're doing, are able to get warnings nowadays. And that includes things like the weather radios that people can have in their homes. It's like having your own siren in your house. It'll wake you up in the middle of the night if there's a storm or flood. The emergency alert system on the local broadcast media, including South Dakota Public Broadcasting. You're an integral part of that emergency alert system in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And even to modern things like the cell phone apps that people can get those critical warnings now instantaneously.
But other thing, I mean, the streams rose and didn't a dam break as well to cause some of the flooding and the most horrendous part of the flooding?
Yes, as the water was rising, then the Canyon Lake Dam on the west side of Rapid City did fail. And so the water from Canyon Lake all flowed into Rapid City. Right. While it didn't cause the worst part of the flooding, it did add to the crest because we did have indications later as we looked at that gauge upstream of the dam that there was very high water coming through. And there was flooding all along Rapid Creek. So it did cause that crest and, of course, all that water coming into the stream at once added to the crest of moving downstream, then, of course, through town. But there probably would have been just as much damage had it not broken.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And 238 people died.
Yes. I mean, that's, like a small town in South Dakota.
Right. Right. And so you've lived in Rapid City for a number of years, and how is the flood remembered on this date there?
Well, every year there are some activities, and especially Friends of the Park have a memorial walk every year. And, of course, on these larger anniversaries, every 10 years and every 5 years, there's more remembrances and programs. The former mayor, Don Burnett, is back in town this week and has done several programs. The big thing that we want to do is help people who weren't here, maybe weren't even alive in 1972, know what happened and know why or how the city recovered. The most visible part of that, of course, is the Greenway, that when they cleared out the houses and other buildings along the stream so that future floods, and there will have floods like that again, will not have as big a impact as far as fatalities. That they understand why that Greenway was created and the really important need to preserve it so that we don't have that kind of loss of life again.
Now, 15 inches of rain in just a few hours seems extensive, but you're saying that could happen again? Or has it happened since? And could it happen again?
It definitely could happen again. First, after the event was studied meteorologically, they thought it was a very highly unusual event. But then just 4 years later, a similar flood happened, a little bit more isolated. This was a big area, covered 60 square miles with the heaviest precipitation, that so that a smaller storm caused flooding in Big Thompson Canyon in Colorado, and that killed over 100 people. And there's been other smaller floods similar like that since then. They said they were smaller, so they didn't affect as big an area. Not as many people were killed, but we realized that having stationary thunderstorms form over the eastern range of mountain ranges, including the Black Hills, can happen. And in fact, just 10 years ago, we had the flash flood that affected Hermosa. And there was a thunderstorm that stayed just west of Hermosa. All the water came down into the Battle Creek, which flooded through town. So we need to realize that it will happen again, and it's just a matter of time before we can have a more serious one that could affect more people.
As you study this from a meteorology perspective, what information do you wish that you know you could have now? Do you wish you could have monitored then, just to watch this because it was so big?
Well, of course, like I said, we've really upgraded the detection and information system, you know, communications too. The reports that the Weather Service and the community were getting upstream were kind of general, but you know, they did indicate that there was high water, you know, very, very heavy rain, and so putting all that information together to realize that this was an incredibly historic event would be important to know.
And if you had a magic wand for 45 years from now, what kind of detection do you wish you had that we might see 45 years from now?
It can be very difficult to say. I mean, the way technology is changing, the way information is being communicated. And so it almost boils down to the human element again and just mm-hmm. making sure people respond to the warning. So, mm-hmm. you know, don't take a warning lightly, you know, understand what it means, and then take the appropriate action. And for something like a flash flood, that means moving away from that stream where the water is rising. And a lot of times we say, go to higher ground. And so people may be thinking, well, I'm going to go to so-and-so's place, a friend or a family member. But if they have to cross the stream to get there, that may be very, very dangerous. And it could be too late for them to get to that location safely. So just when people who are in that area are faced with that situation, they just need to move away from the stream as quickly as possible.
All right. Susan Sanders, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate talking with you.